This week in KMA Land, Shenandoah officials plan legal action on nuisance property. Shen Water Conservation Ordinance Amendment clears second reading. Shen School Board selects Mustangs as official mascot. Page County Supervisors back wind turbine road work. And Clarinda Hangar Expansion Project completed. I'm Mike Peterson. Well, from nuisance properties to water conservation to school mascot and sign changes to wind turbine-related issues, it was a full week in KMA Land. First off, time has run out for the owner of a Shenandoah property deemed a nuisance by city officials. By unanimous vote Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council approved a resolution to continue 657A proceedings to gain title to property at 308 East Washington Avenue. With the resolution's approval, the council rejected owner Stephen J. Smith's request, made late last month, for a six-month extension to renovate the property. Council members originally granted Smith a nine-month extension last April with a stipulation that electrical and water services were restored to the property and that he make planned updates, including repairs to an apple shed. But Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen reminded Smith the council voted in late January to take legal action because of a lack of progress.
You did not define what your plans were on this property, nor did you give us any kind of a timeline for completion making this property livable. You have owned this property since 2008. The house has had no water service since 2012. And per our city ordinance, any resident that doesn't have active utilities for 6 months is considered abandoned. It has had electricity since May of 2025, but no improvements have been made.
Pleading with the council for more time, Smith replied that family hardships and his own health issues stalled the project, but that he and his contractor, Miguel Sosa of Latimer, have a plan to renovate the structure.
I'm just pleading and asking for the time for my contractor to get everything corrected to make the council happy. That's all I want. Just let him do what he can do. He can do it probably in a couple of months. Not even that.
While extending sympathies to Smith's personal problems, Councilman John Eric Ratner motioned to continue legal action against the property, saying nothing's happened since the council granted the original nine-month extension.
I don't feel confident that anything's going to be done by allowing you more time. I apologize. So my motion is to, based upon the fact that we've given you the reasonable accommodation, that nothing, little to nothing has happened on the property in the time frame that was given, that at this point it goes, we continue with the 657A and it goes to the courts and you make your case there.
City Attorney Milan Sorensen confirms he plans to file suit in Page County District Court asking for the city to gain title to the property because it's vacant and deemed a nuisance. Sorensen, however, says Smith still has time to make necessary repairs.
The law provides that the defendant, Mr. Stevens, has 60 days to fix the problem. And so he's not without some time. You didn't give him any time, but the court process gives him 60 days.
Accompanied by a Shenandoah police officer, Sorensen explained the next legal steps to Smith and Sosa outside the council chambers following the council's vote. Also at Tuesday night's council meeting, a council member called on the community's businesses to do their part on water conservation. By a 4-1 vote Tuesday night, the council approved the second reading of an amendment to Chapter 93 of the city's Water Conservation Ordinance. First Ward Councilman Jeffrey Capps cast the lone dissenting vote. Capps says constituents that elected him in his ward last November want water restriction provisions for businesses included in the city's ordinances.
I'm not speaking of any business in particular, but I was voted in by people to represent them and I agree with them that we need to have some kind of provision to have businesses at least pitch in, and like just a small amount.
While saying he understands Cap's position, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen questioned the legality of imposing water regulations on businesses. McQueen reacted to Cap's statement on KMA's Morning Line program Wednesday morning.
You cannot legally stop a business that has to have this to continue to operate. You know, I think some of the might be smaller things, such as a business maybe washing off their parking lot or washing off their sidewalks or something. Yeah, that I can see. But, you know, it's going to be very hard to put any kind of restriction on the schools, the hospitals, nursing homes, even businesses that rely on water.
McQueen also addressed questions at Tuesday night's meeting as to whether the city is actively enforcing Stage 4 water conservation measures in effect since October 2024 and whether Shenandoah police are catching violators.
The last 2 years, officers have went to property owners and just basically the first time let them know what the conservation measure is and where we're at. But we can proceed if we need to, if this continues, into sending fines on these people. But, you know, we don't want to do that. We want to make sure everybody understands.
McQueen says residents should report any water restriction violators to the city or police. The amendment's third reading takes place at the next regular council meeting March 24th. After years of having two nicknames and years of off and on discussions regarding the issue, Shenandoah School District is uniting under one mascot. By unanimous vote late Monday afternoon, the Shenandoah School Board approved the Mustang as the official school monitor. The board's decision coincides with the upcoming transition from the Hawkeye 10 Conference to the Western Iowa Conference, beginning in the 2026-27 school year. Members of the State Education Board's Committee for Conference Realignment recently paved the way for Shenandoah and other schools to switch conferences by approving the relocations. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Tuesday morning, Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Carrie Nelson said it was time for the board to settle the mascot issue.
Since that time, the board had made a decision not to place it on the agenda or table it or do anything. It was just kind of in a holding pattern, but the conversation kept reoccurring and coming up. They'd been contacted by different people, and so throughout the last 2 years, it's just become this reoccurring theme that we need to address this and make a decision. And Mrs. Fichter had asked for it to be placed back on the board agenda. And when we discussed the conference realignment at our last meeting, it was discussed that if we're going to realign the conference, now is the time to make a decision about the mascot.
For years, Shenandoah High's boys teams competed as the Mustangs and the girls as the Phillies. Two longtime residents spoke against the change. Bill Greenleaf is a 1981 SHS graduate. Greenleaf claims dropping the Phillies nickname will anger former classmates, many of whom may refuse to attend class reunions, costing the city tourism revenue.
I've been talking to my fellow class members across the county on online discussions. Every single one is totally against it.
Bill's brother John, a 1977 Shenandoah High grad, alleges a poll taken on his Facebook page, Always and Forever, the Life and Times of Shenandoah, Iowa, indicates 99.99%, his words, of the respondents oppose the name change.
And with as many athletes that have come through this community, through this school district, and have gone on to more professional sports, like over in Nebraska or Iowa or Missouri or where have you, I think it would be a disservice to those athletes that gave blood, sweat, and tears playing for this school district, whether it be boys or girls.
In a statement issued following the board's vote, school officials say the change is not intended to erase the history or significance of the Phillies' name or the many outstanding female athletes who proudly represented Shenandoah under it. But officials add unifying under one mascot provides an opportunity to strengthen school identity and bring all Shenandoah teams together under a single symbol as the district switches conferences. With a new conference and a unified mascot comes new signage to the Shenandoah School District. By unanimous vote late Monday afternoon, the Shenandoah School Board accepted the Shenandoah Iowa Education Foundation's donation of $46,230. Proceeds from the donation will provide for a new monument sign at the corner of Anacroze and Mustang Drive, marking the school district's high school and K-8 building campuses. Plans also call for the updated signage at key locations throughout the district, including school entrances and directional markers. Speaking on that same Morning Line program, Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Carrie Nelson says the district worked with CEF officials to develop the new signage.
As we were looking at projects about a year ago, this was one that was identified as something that the district would felt was a need, and CEF also supported strongly. And so we worked in tandem together to generate what the signage would look like, and I was very pleased with the support for moving forward.
Plans call for erecting the new signs beginning in June and continuing through the following months. Nelson says she appreciates CEF's donations.
They're paying for the entirety of the sign and the street signs that will be going in. So that's even more appreciated, because the cost of doing something like that right now within an existing budget, that would not be something we would take on without support. And so their generosity is making this possible for the district, and I really appreciate and thank them for that.
CEF officials say the new signs feature a consistent and vibrant design reflecting the foundation's commitment of supporting the district. Foundation officials note donations from Family Challenge participants helped endow and solidify the necessary funding to complete the projects. Road restoration work completed following a wind turbine construction project got the Page County Board of Supervisors acceptance this week. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the supervisors unanimously approved the letter of acceptance following a discussion from County Engineer J.D. King, County Attorney Jim Varley, and MidAmerican Energy Project developer Jared Nowak. The letter is part of the county's road use agreement with MidAmerican Energy for the Shenandoah Hills Wind Project. Acknowledging work identified by the county as needing restoration has been completed or reimbursed. Nowak says county crews conducted the majority of the road restoration work, with MidAmerican then reimbursing the county.
This is just to kind of acknowledge that, you know, the project kind of completed construction last year, got with JD, reimbursed him for the road repairs, and then, you know, trying to reimburse him for the aggregate. And like I said, we didn't really want to apply it all towards the end of the year, knowing we're going into the winter season. Yep. So, and we thought it'd be better put to use by JD and his team.
However, King cited a one-year probationary period after the board signed the letter, during which the county could still identify any road deficiencies and be reimbursed by MidAmerican. King adds that as of Tuesday, MidAmerican reimbursed the county over $932,000 in road restoration efforts.
We billed MidAmerican 3 times. The first time we had some patching and some other expenses. We got a reimbursement of $181,720. We had a bigger patching endeavor and billed MidAm $532,394. And then the rock that we haven't placed yet, we got a check for $218,441.
Construction crews recently finalized the erection of over 50 turbines south of Shenandoah in both Page and Fremont counties. Clarinda officials this week put the wrap on an airport hangar expansion project. At a brief regular meeting Wednesday evening, the Clarinda City Council unanimously approved a resolution accepting the construction of 5 new T-hangars and a taxiing lane extension at the Clarinda Municipal Airport, with the final contract cost coming in just over $790,000. The council also approved the final pay request to Henningsen Construction for the project, awarding retainage of over $39,500. City Manager Gary McLarnon tells KMA News the project was initiated in 2024 to address the growing demand for hangar space at the airport, where units can be rented to area pilots.
We did have a shortage of hangar space down at the airport. We had a waiting list of pilots wanting spaces. So we did make the determination back in 2024 to see if the FAA would approve helping us fund a new T-hangars. And they did end up approving that.
Henningsen Construction oversaw the project after submitting the lowest bid of roughly $783,000, 90% of which was covered by the Federal Aviation Administration. McLarnon says additional expenses incurred during the project raised the final price.
During the project, we did have net change orders of $7,588. So that made the total contract price to finish the project $790,707.
McLarnon says the federal government covered 90% of both the construction and engineering costs for the project. Montgomery County is among those in KMA land potentially impacted by changes in Iowa's Veterans Services funding. County Veterans Affairs Director Edward Young told the county's Board of Supervisors Tuesday morning that a bill under consideration in the Iowa legislature would redistribute funding to county Veterans Affairs offices based on population.
We're talking about $990,000 that they are spent each year on the Veterans Affairs. Well, the big counties have been crying, saying that they're so big, they need more money. So in the view of the legislature, I guess, they have decided that they're not going to give them any more money. They're just going to redistribute it.
As a result, Young says his agency could lose $7,451, about three-quarters of the $10,000 in state funding per year his office currently receives. He says the funding cut would put his department and Veterans Affairs offices in other small counties in a stranglehold.
Mine doesn't really come out of it, but everything else does, and I won't be able to do a lot of things that I want to do. And try to promote. You know, right now on doing our outreach, I'm going to all of the different industries now and talking to the vets there, letting them know that we're here. We're really and truly picking up people because of that. I think we had 56 people that visited me just last month in February. Came in the office.
Young called on the supervisors to contact local legislators, asking them to oppose the redistribution.
We need to get a hold of our representative and our senator and tell them that, yes, we understand that the bigger counties probably deserve more. But the small counties, this could be a killer for them.
And despite the proposed redistribution, the number of veterans Montgomery County serves continues to grow. In 2021, Young says 196 veterans in the county were on disability, generating approximately $316,000 for the county. That number grew to 227 veterans served in 2025, bringing in about $494,000 to the county. Sydney officials are exploring options in a pair of rehabilitation projects on properties formerly owned by the city. At its regular meeting earlier this week, the Sydney City Council heard an update on the rehab work at 306 Fillmore Street and 201 Webster Street. The properties are two of the three the city sold to Jason Hess with Hess Properties in September 2023 for redevelopment into new housing. Last year, the council initially moved forward with reacquiring the properties due to a lack of progress. That was before an amended agreement with Hess in September extended the time frame for completing the homes. But Sydney Mayor Justin Shirley says the deadline for rehabbing the two properties and listing them for sale once again expired.
Hess Properties kind of transferred the contract to a new party, Carson Cusick, who's been doing the work on the two properties. And so myself, along with our building inspector, Phil Richter, and Councilwoman Travis asked to come see the properties and see the progress we were able to walk through, and they're close to being done.
Now, the agreement reached last year stipulated that work must also commence on the construction of a new home in the third property sold to Hess, 106 Main Street, within 7 days of the two rehab homes selling. Shirley says the hope is to finalize the deed transfer at 306 Fillmore and 201 Webster later this month.
We anticipate having a final walkthrough next Tuesday, the 17th, and if they're completed, then we'll take it back to the council and recommend that they fulfill the transfer of deed at that time.
The agreement reached in September of last year stipulated crews would have a year to complete the home construction at 106 Main once it begins. Clarinda school officials await estimates on recent damage to the high school's auditorium. Clarinda School Board received an update on damage incurred to Cardinal Theater at its regular meeting late Wednesday afternoon. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Thursday morning, Clarinda School Superintendent Jeff Privia says high winds from recent severe weather impacted the auditorium, which was built in the early 1970s as an addition to the original 1968 high school facility.
The fly area that sticks up out of the auditorium is steel, and on that steel is some metal panels that have insulation in them. The wind a while back caught the one of the corners and expanded the inside of that area, and kind of like it blew up. So we had one of our walls was actually coming away from the steel. We did a quick repair. We got a boom truck and we screwed those back to the steel framing.
Privius's cost estimates of the damage were not yet available. The superintendent says the damage is not affecting the building's students or programming yet.
We buttoned it up pretty good, sealed some corners to keep it at least wind rain resistant. We will see what happens with insurance and when repairs can begin. I'm a little more worried about summer activities like Glenn Miller days and those kind of things that happen in the summer. So we've pretty much figured it's going to be a 4 to 6 week process to repair the towers. We'll have to see how it goes and what adaptations we have to make once we can get things started.
Privia says the damage is not connected to the 712 complex's expansion and renovation project completed last fall. Consultants are putting the Essex School District's facilities under the microscope this weekend. Plans for the Origin Group's comprehensive tour were outlined at Wednesday's Essex School Board meeting. Essex School Superintendent Greg Cruikshank tells KMA News. The tour includes the K-12 complex, the East Gym, and other buildings as part of a facilities analysis.
At some point in time in the near future, they're going to put the report compiled, share that with the board, and then probably the next step after that is going to be looking at a timeline and schedule for some community engagement meetings around this conversation of a possible additional facility, which would, you know, focus on all aspects of the community, the school, city, daycare.
Cruikshank says the company's tour will cover the full gamut of conditions in each facility.
Just a comprehensive look at our systems, plumbing, HVAC, electrical, all aspects in that regard, as far as how the buildings are functioning and how efficient and how effective those systems are, getting up on the roof, checking on the condition of the roof, the structural integrity of the facilities, just about every aspect there from an engineering architectural standpoint, they're going to be examining.
Cruikshank says the study's results will serve as a roadmap for not only a proposed all-purpose facility in the community. Pottawatomie County is the latest to consider establishing an Emergency Medical Services Advisory Council. At its regular meeting Tuesday morning, the County Board of Supervisors heard a presentation from Lewis Township Fire Chief and President of the Pottawatomie County Fire Chiefs Association, Jacob Hardiman, on the possibility of establishing the council. Supervisor Susan Miller says more than a year ago, the county established a 911 telecommunications advisory council. At that same time, she says discussions also commenced on forming a task force to explore funding and staffing options for EMS services throughout the county.
There is a national crisis developing in the recruitment and retention of volunteer first responders. This is true in Pottawatomie County, resulting in a lack of EMS volunteers to respond to medical calls. Providing ambulance service to communities with 100% volunteer departments is a challenge, especially during daytime work hours. Communities with nursing home facilities have additional call volumes.
Miller says departments across the county vary in staffing. Some are full volunteers. Others, including Avoca and Lewis Township, have some paid staff, and Council Bluffs is a fully paid force. Currently, Hardiman says ambulance billing is a cornerstone of EMS funding, but he indicates it's also one of the biggest variables between the number of calls and how much of that bill is actually covered by insurance.
It's not like a department can say, oh, we're running into a funding shortage, we should probably increase our billing a little bit, because when you increase your billing, it doesn't really matter because Medicare pays X amount and Medicaid pays X amount. So we rely heavily on fundraisers and donations and different things like that to make sure that we can operate. And then we look at our EMS billing as also, it's not a guarantee. I mean, we can't guarantee that we're going to go on X amount of runs every year that are billable through EMS.
Hardiman emphasized the importance of moving the conversation forward, since implementing an EMS essential service tax would likely take a couple of years.
If the Board of Supervisors said today, yes, we want to do EMS as an essential service tax, we want to, you know, we think funding's the major issue and we want to do it, it would take us almost 2 years to do all of the studies and all of the public hearings and all the votes that it would take to do that. So I think the time is now.
He emphasizes Pottawatomie County faces more unique challenges than other counties.
The other counties that have implemented it use that city department to implement the countywide EMS system. And so it runs out of that city department. So it's easy, right? The department's getting more funding. They can run it out. But Pottawatomie County is huge, and the paid city department is on the far western border of it. So most of those, the big paid department is right smack dab in the middle, and it kind of works out well for them. But we have unique geographical challenges.
A 2021 state law paved the way for Iowa counties to declare EMS an essential service. The designation allows counties to implement a property tax levy of up to 75 cents per $1,000 valuation, an income surtax, or both, as long as it receives 60% voter approval as a ballot question. While no formal action was taken Tuesday, the majority of board members felt they would be in favor of establishing an advisory council in the future. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.